and I never crossed religious paths. We were acquaintances, not much more than that with any of the players, especially when I first started, Red Barber, who was not only the senior announcer, but also another father towards me, as he once wrote, maybe I was the son he never had. So he was determined that I would succeed, and I'm extremely grateful for that attitude. And he was a disciplinarian towards me, and one of the things he insisted upon was that I not get close to the players. So they were all my acquaintances, a nod, how are you? Every now and then I might hear an anecdote, but I was never close to any of them until the fellow who was carrying the cross throughout his life, and he just died, Ralph Branca. But all of the other players, I never got close to at all, including Jackie. We did supposedly race against each other on ice skates. That's been a story told a million times. But as far as faith is concerned, or a serious matter such as God, no. Never had a word about him with that.
Got it. And that's what I wanted to ask you. I do talk a lot about Ralph Branca in the book, and I've seen you quoted elsewhere talking about him carrying that cross. And I assume, you know, in some of the interviews I've seen, you've talked about his, of course, dinner, I believe, right after the game with Father Pat Rowley.
Right. In fact, and it's been written up many times, but Ralph said to Father Pat, why me? And Father Pat gave him the answer that is the only answer he could give, saying, because God picked a strong man to carry the cross. And Ralph accepted that. And I thought he carried his cross with a great deal of grace and dignity. There was no sign of bitterness. And what made it very difficult for him was the fact that in New York, where the great moment occurred, everybody wanted lunches and dinners to honor Bobby. And, of course, part of the story had to be Ralph had to go as well. And that had to be extremely difficult, with one man exulting over the moment at the expense of the other. But I thought Ralph handled that wonderfully well. We went to Japan with the ball club in 1956, and the team came back the same way. They came back from Japan to California to New York, and Ann, Ralph, and I went from Japan to Hong Kong through the Middle East, into Europe, into the British Isles, and eventually we came home on the Queen Mary. The point being that for that period of time, a good 3 weeks, we were very close with each other, you know, every day, certainly for lunch and dinner, yeah.
And you mentioned a couple minutes ago about Red Barber and what a mentor he was, and that specifically he told you, don't get close to these guys. And I did read in one of the books that's been written about all of this that you kind of broke that rule, if you will, for one person, and it was Ralph Branca, and that's why it was hard for you. You were in the booth not calling the game, but in the booth with Red. I talk a lot about the game in 51, of course, October 3rd, and you looked down at Ann Branca.
Right, and I remember vividly because we had been close, reasonably so. We double-dated maybe three times. Ann was going to Marymount. She had a roommate, and so Ralph and Ann, and then I would date the roommate two or three times, not more than that. But that was the, let's say, where I broke the code, where I got closer to a player. Very ordinary dates. But instinctively, with the home run, I looked down to see how Ann was. And as I remember it, she bent down, opened her purse, took out a handkerchief, closed the purse, opened up the handkerchief, and then buried her face in the handkerchief. I seem to remember that vividly, unless my mind is really drifting off to another place.
And then you, I read where you told Sports Illustrated that then you went into the clubhouse and you basically had to step over Ralph?
we went to clubhouse. You walked in. You went up the flight of stairs, wooden stairs. You opened up the door. You walked in, and then there were like three or four wooden steps. And you would go up the four steps. That would get you up to lockers and then the training room and all that stuff. And when I walked in, Ralph was spread-eagled on the four steps. And I actually had to kind of step over one arm. And I went into the trainer's room because it was probably the worst circumstance. The Dodger clubhouse was dead silent. But the Giant clubhouse was just across the hall. And on the field in front of the clubhouse looking up, there were thousands of Giant fans celebrating. And the Giant players were celebrating. And Eddie Stanky came out on the steps of the Giant clubhouse and did a little imitation of Red Barber. And so all this, you know, hallelujah stuff was going on 10 feet away. And here we are listening to all that noise. And I remember walking into the trainer's room, and there were two men, one sitting on each training bench or table or whatever you want to call it. One was Jackie and one was Pee Wee Reese. And I didn't even say hello. I just sat down in a chair, and the silence was broken by Pee Wee. And he said to Jackie, "You know the one thing I'll never understand?" And Jackie didn't answer. He just looked at him. And Pee Wee said, "How this game has not driven me crazy."
Wow. I wonder what he meant by that. You know, I mean, I get that one game, but they obviously also had a wonderful, yeah, they had so many wonderful times as well.
Pee Wee came up in 41, so they lost in 41. They lost all the time. They would get into the World Series and lose. And perhaps that's what he meant. Or maybe he just meant the ups and downs, the maddening ups and downs, throughout his entire career. So his career at the moment was probably about 10 years. And a lot of ups and downs. And that, of course, blowing a lead in the ninth inning of a game that led to the World Series, that was another crushing blow. Because you remember, they lost in 41, they lost in 47, they lost in 49. Now they blow it in 51. So you can kind of understand he was the captain, and he tried to keep everything calm, and I'm sure he paid a price for that as well.
And last thing on Ricky, I mentioned Ricky at the top. You know, from what I've read, and since I never got to meet him, Ricky was much more outspoken about his faith and religion, and you know, I don't know if it's proper to say that he wore it on his sleeve, but it seemed like he was pretty open about that.
Well, number one, we all called him Mr. Ricky. Nobody ever just used his last word, to my knowledge. Maybe his older scouts and Fresco Thompson and Buzzy, they might call him Ranch. But all the rest of us, to my knowledge, called him Mr. Ricky. Jackie called him Mr. Ricky. So it was a kind of respect for him. I naturally was not there when Jackie had his interview, but when I had mine with him, and here I am, a wide-eyed kid, sent over by Red Barber to interview with Mr. Ricky, I thought he was going to ask me about the infield fire rule or some other part of baseball, and instead he wanted to find out about me. And eventually, after talking for quite some time, he said to me, "Are you engaged?" And I said, "No, sir." He said, "Are you going steady?" In fact, he began by saying, "Are you married?" I said, "No, sir." "Are you engaged?" "No, sir." "Are you going steady?" "No, sir." And then he took one hand, kind of pounded it on the desk, and he said, "Get a girl, go steady, get engaged, and get married." And that was that. That was his advice, because he always worried, especially about young, single players on the road. And, of course, here I was, not a player, but I was single representing a team, and I was going to be on the road. So he was very much of a practitioner as far as what do young men do on the road after the game. And so that was, it wasn't a lecture. but it certainly drove home the point.